Right now, though, let's put all that aside for a little bit and talk tech and technology with a man who I think I might make a little bit jealous to start. This is Fevzi Turkamp, of course, from The Gadget Detective himself. You can find him at Gadget Detective on Twitter. And Fevzi, are you prepared to be a little bit jealous right now?
Yes. Am I going to have some sort of gear envy?
It's not gear envy. It's actually a person envy. I was talking to a lady who is a phenomenal woman, actually, incredible career. She's won a few Emmys earlier on the show today. In fact, I'll replay a bit of it in the next hour at some point. And she's won some Emmys and everything else. She was the screenwriter of Tron, the original Tron. She wrote the screenplay and all the rest of it. Her other half is the chap who used to run, this might not mean anything to a lot of people listening, but that used to run the Palo Alto Research Center, Xerox Park, where all of the gadgets and gizmos, all of the technology we think point-and-click interfaces and network programming, everything else we have today, it all started there. And he was the guy who looked over it in the 70s when it was all happening. How cool is that?
So that was the mouse was developed there. And the windowing operating system, as you say, you know, the visual operating system. And that's where Apple got its stuff from.
Were inspired by, as they say.
But that I don't know, there's different stories about that. Actually, they licensed it. But amazing though.
I believe they did, but it's one of those funny things, isn't it? And of course, Xerox Park was owned by Xerox, the photocopier company, who paid for the research for all this incredible technology and clearly didn't really know what it was about or whether it was a big deal. So they just, didn't care. They just let everybody else have at it without realizing they could have owned the whole computing industry and everything. Really remarkable.
It's a bit like giving a V6 engine to a horse and cart company, isn't it? I mean, they didn't know what to do with it, really.
Yeah, well, they have to put oil in it. What are you talking about? Oh, dearie me. Let's talk gadgets then a little bit. Especially, I want to start, if this is all right, with your gadget of the week this time round. Because you've got an idea, suggesting a hard drive here from Western Digital, this WD Black. What's special about this? We've got a lot of external hard drives around, Fevzi.
Right.
So what's so special about this one?
Absolutely. So it's from Western Digital. It's called the WD Black P50. And it's an external hard drive that connects via a USB-C connector. It's when you see it, you'll realise it's actually marketed towards and designed for gamers. So people who play a lot of games on gaming consoles, you know, be it next-gen Xbox or PlayStation, or people who game on PCs. It will also run on Macs, but not much gaming happens on Macs. So it's an external drive. It's about roughly about 4.5 inches in length and less than 1/2 inch thick, so it will fit in a shirt pocket. It looks the part. We shouldn't really talk too much about appearances, but it's in this full metal jacket, you know, it's this aluminium black coated. There's a Call of Duty branded version of it as well.
I'm not surprised. It looks like it's ready for war, frankly. It's got that kind of look. It must be quite rugged, I imagine, as well.
It is, because it's got the metal case. So it's marketed for gamers, but actually what it is a very, very high-speed external drive. And you call it a hard drive, actually not a rotating hard drive, no moving parts.
Right.
It's what's called a solid-state drive. But it will do faster speeds than most people PCs are currently capable of, in that you can transfer 2,000 megabytes per second.
So my goodness.
To give you an idea, because I thought, well, what's 2,000 megabytes per second? That's like a 2-hour high-definition movie transferred every 2 seconds. It's the equivalent of 500 photos a second taken with a 12-megapixel camera, or 34 hours of MP3 music transferred every second. So it's hugely fast. Really quite incredible. As I say, we'll work obviously with the games consoles that we mentioned, PlayStation, Xbox, Macs and PCs as well.
And can I ask Fevzi, why do gamers need such a fast external hard drive? What would they do with that?
Because games are humongous now. So I tested the 1 terabyte version of this drive. So it comes in 500 gigabytes, which is also known as 0.5 terabyte. So 0.5 terabyte, 1 terabyte, 2 terabytes, or 4 terabytes. Okay. The 1 terabyte version will hold about 25 average-sized games. You know,
oh my goodness, it's not a lot, games. Really, is it? Yeah.
Well, because they're about 36 gig each. You know, the gigabytes each. So that's why. And the fact that this will plug into a games console means that you don't have to fill up, you know, the internal drive, or you don't have to upgrade the internal drive. It will plug in and work at full speed. And it means that, you know, if you go from one console to another, either if you've got different consoles, you know, around the house or so forth, you can do it in that way. Or, you know, once we're allowed to do it, you go around to a mate's house, plug it in, or nick your mate's console, more likely, and plug it in there. I mean, it's just quite incredible what it will do. One thing to say that it is geared towards gamers in that it's in an active state all the time. You know, some drives, when you leave them alone, they go into sort of like a sleep mode.
To be more energy efficient, I suppose, normally.
It is, absolutely. So this one, it's much more attentive because it's in active mode zero all the time, which does mean it draws more power and produces less heat. But that aluminium shell does a good job. And it means that, you know, it literally is very responsive. So I would say not only good for gamers, also good for people like content creators, people who work with video editing, things like that. This would make a great, let's say you've got yourself a Mac Mini or any of the modern Macs with a nice USB-C, high-speed USB-C connector on it. This will make full use of it. And actually what you could do, and we'll test this in a future feature, I said that, a future feature. you can actually use it on a Mac as the external boot drive. Now, what does that mean? Ooh. That means you don't have to use the internal drive at all. You plug this thing in, the operating system, your Mac OS will sit on it, all your apps and all your data. So, in fact, it's really only using the Mac as a host. And then you can literally go from Mac to Mac to Mac and you know, give each of those Macs a sort of brain and personality transplant, because when it boots up, as it starts up, it will be your device set up as you want.
Excellent.
The way I use that, just to let you know, is I have different drives, each with their own personalities. So let's say I'm doing music creation.
Oh, okay. I thought you were saying like grumpy and happy and all that, seven dwarfs.
No, that's just me. But then you've got these different drives. One is, say, your video editing drive. The other one is your audio production drive. The other one is your gaming drive. And then you just plug them in onto different machines at different times, and your machine just starts up as a completely different machine.
Fantastic.
The hardware just becomes the host. So we will do a feature specifically on that, but this is a great device. I loved it a lot. I told them they can't have it back. we're currently fighting about it. These are not cheap drives, to be honest, and that's something to be aware of. So they start at £130 for the half a terabyte. It's actually, it's fair, and it's quite linear, because if you multiply that up all the way up to 4 terabytes, which most of us don't need, is £858.
Okay. And so, how many stars, Febsy, finally, what would you give it?
Four stars out of five.
Okay. One off probably partially because of the price?
It's not that it's unfair, but it's fair to say that SSD drive, so this is solid state drive, no moving parts.
Yeah.
It's fair to say that they are dropping in price. So what I would say to you is only buy the capacity that you'll think you'll need, say, in the next year.
Good point.
Because after next year, you know, they'll probably be around half the price for the same capacity. So you could actually do that, and then there's nothing to stop you using the two. It's not like you have to,
of course,
you know, remove the old one to use the new one.
And never use it again.
You can swap them out and say have 25 on one and then 50 on the next one, which costs you the same amount as the 25.
Absolutely. So Febsy, thank you very much for that, mate. You stick around, because I do want to talk to you about how some of the internet in our area might get faster. BBC Radio Berkshire. I'm joined now again by the wonderful Febsy Turkap, the gadget detective himself. And cut you off in your prime there, Febsy, but we were just about to start talking about, now this could be very interesting. We've done a little bit of sort of research on this ourselves here at BBC Radio Berkshire, because I know part of Hampshire is going to benefit from a bit of a bump in broadband speed. We don't know if it's our bit, you know, the area in and around and just sort of to the south of Basingstoke and everything else. We're still trying to find out, but it seems to be a lot of places around Britain might finally get the broadband speeds that they deserve.
Yes, or at least by the end of 2025. So the government's announced the first stages of its plans to get ultra-fast broadband into some of the remotest parts of London. So by ultra-fast, we mean up to 1 gigabit per second. That's 1,000 megabits or a million kilobits per second. Or to put it in the context of the last drive, it's 1/16th of the speed of that drive.
Okay.
So, you know,
that's still pretty fast, though. You'd take that, wouldn't you?
As an internet connection, that's hugely fast. Now, the thing about this is it said that it's got a revised promise now, because it originally said all homes and all parts of the country by the end of 2025. That all has now dropped to 85%. Which actually doesn't, you say, oh, well, it sounds okay. But it's not really okay, because this is about the government topping up the money required for, so commercial organizations, you know, people like BT Openreach and so forth, they want to put it in areas where they're going to get a return on their investment. They don't want to put it in the Outer Hebrides because it's expensive to do, and they don't get their money back in a reasonable period of time. So the idea is the government steps in with up to £5 billion, only 1.2 billion available before 2024, but up to £5 billion, they step in to sort of get it done in those areas. So we're talking about the hard to reach areas. Now, 100% would be great. When you drop to 85, by definition, you're excluding the hardest to reach and most expensive to reach, 15%. And then consider that probably without any subsidy, the industry would probably get over 70% rollout by the end of 2025 anyway. So what you're talking about is up to 15% more homes, which is something. But given that it was a general election pledge in end of 2019, it took them less than a year to water it down. So I think it's kind of disappointing. However, having said that, if you live in Cambridgeshire, Cornwall, Cumbria, Dorset, Durham, Essex, etc., you know, it will come as a welcome thing. But I think, you know, the whole idea is infrastructure is important. We talk a lot about things like high-speed rail.
Yeah.
But actually, it's really in this sort of post-Brexit society where we're all meant to be, you know, whiz-bang and go-getting country, we really need to have a good internet infrastructure, and there's parts of this country where unfortunately it's been far too slow.
And here's the thing, Fevzi, just a last little note to sort of leave this on. Should we even be doing sort of just these wired connections anyway? People keep talking about how the future is completely wireless. Should we be just paving the way for I know it doesn't exist yet, but like a 6G or a 7G, and just say, look, we're going to make everything wireless. And in many ways, that might be an easier rollout. Get all those masts everywhere. And that's where we get our super fast sort of data from.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly been the way that a lot of countries that haven't had a sort of a history of having a lot of copper wire network around the place have jumped straight to cellular solutions like 4G and now 5G. It is doable. And I suspect that in the end, some of those hard to reach areas will be topped up in that way.
Yeah.
The problem is that our 5G network is also hugely delayed because we very late in the day took a decision to exclude Huawei from the core network.
Of course, yeah.
Huawei being the Chinese company that there were security concerns about. And that put us back about 1 to 2 years. And it means that the network's going to be slower. And it's going to roll out more slowly as well. And it's going to cost more. So I think we have to do everything all at once because, you know, we're going to struggle. And if you haven't got that super fast broadband, and particularly now, you know, post-COVID, or hopefully in a post-COVID world, you know, where we've learned about people working from home and video calling and virtual technologies, these things are great technologies, but they use a lot of bandwidth. That's to say, they need a fast internet connection. And at the moment, there's some parts of the country just can't do that. And that will affect, you know, it's not just annoying for households, it affects businesses and the investment in those areas and knock on, it affects the economy of those areas. So this is key. And the government, you know, 5 billion isn't a lot of money for rolling it out to, you know, that 30% of hard to reach places in the UK.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, it's definitely going to rumble on, and there'll be a lot of debate about it as that rollout goes on, no doubt. Fevzi, thank you so much for your time. As always, we know a lot of people who listen to this suddenly have tech questions and everything else, and you're always such a good person to go and answer some of those. Most of the time, if you know the answer, you're usually the best person to speak to. What's the best way for us to get in touch with you?
Sure. So the best way is to come and find me on Twitter at Gadget Detective, and you can message me through there. Or if you go to gadgetdetective.com, you'll see some of you know, the output from there as well and can glean some information. But if you've got a specific question, go to Twitter at Gadget Detective.
Perfect. That's what we will do. And we will speak to Fevzi again. He'll be back with Bill at the same time next week here on BBC Radio Berkshire.